And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
All right, guys, welcome back to CD Burners. We are doing an episode today on a fantastic album, Chiodo's All's Well That Ends Well. What did you think of this record?
So I wasn't the biggest Chiodo's guy growing up. I knew them. I had them on mixes. I knew people that really, really fucked with Chiodo's. I wasn't like a thing until we started doing Emo Night that I started to listen to them. And, you know, giving this album an entire listen through, I was like, oh yeah, I get it. I was like, I get why there are people that are so diehard about it. Like, I get it. It was one of those things that clicked right away.
I thought this album was fucking awesome. I was a big fan back in high school. I listened to this a lot in my Jeep Cherokee. I had merch. I saw them live. I was a fan. And it's been a while since I've listened front to back. I actually honestly couldn't tell you for real that I've listened to it front to back because I would download these songs illegally. Sorry, Craig. But everybody did. This is kind of the first time I really like had a physical CD in my hand. And I think probably the first time that I listened to this album with all of the interludes.
And in a row?
Yeah.
Because I
never listened to it front to back. I would just like, you know, this album is an experience. Like it has like intro and like sound effects and it takes you on a whole ass journey.
It has a beginning, middle, and end. It really feels like a full album. It feels like I have a lot of stuff to say about this album.
You say that at the beginning of every episode.
Well, I do.
Believe it? He has a lot of stuff to say about the album.
I like that they were like, hey, let's do every style of music in one song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And it's also when they do this at When We Were Young, that piano intro is going to murder.
It's going to crush.
Like, it's going to murder. I was listening to it on the plane and I was like, oh fuck, dude. Like them playing for the first time.
I have
time,
chills
like,
just thinking about it.
Like it's gonna motherfuck the crowd.
Yeah.
Like that is, it's awesome. And you know, we've had Craig a lot and, you know, listening to this and looking up a bunch of shit about Chiodo's, I kind of understand him a lot better and understand like why he wants to do the things that he does when he's with us and why he is the way he is. It's a really dynamic album. It's like, you know, we had him at Webster Hall and he was like, yes, absolutely. I want ballerinas to dance on stage while I play the piano. And listening to this album, that made sense to me.
Yes. Yeah. Craig is a very artsy guy, I feel like. This album combines a lot of different styles, as you mentioned. Instrumentation's really wild. I don't really even know how to genre-wise classify this because it's kind of a mix of a whole bunch. I guess it's mostly like metalcore.
It's mostly like post-hardcore.
Post-hardcore?
It's like post-hardcore. There is one. It's really funny because the majority of the album is that. It's like spastic. And like, you know, there's like circusy feel on it. And then there's one like pop punk song. It's like, there's like one like straight up pop punk song on the album. But it is like, if you listen to it, what I liked is that it feels like a full album, like I said, but every song feels like a full, like beginning, middle, and end.
It's a crazy journey. Every song I feel like is a crazy journey and it has all of these parts. It's like non-traditional song structure, you know, but it does feel cohesive in a way. And I think the one thread that sort of ties the whole thing together is Craig's voice. You can go from like neoclassical piano to like a hardcore breakdown to a pop punk chorus back to like ocean sounds and clown guitars. And it all sounds fine because there's this like constant, beautiful angel voice of Craig Owens on top of all of it.
Look, there's a, you can tell why there's a ton of copycat bands after this. Like you can tell. Like I've heard hundreds of bands that try to do what this album does And I can see them all referencing, being like, oh, this was the moment that we wanted to be in a band. This is the moment that we knew what we wanted to sound like. This is like what defines us. Like I 100% can see that this album changing, like put a kid putting this fucking CD in and like changing the trajectory of his life.
Absolutely.
Like I like absolutely see that. And there, you know, there is, we'll talk about it later. Like I have some other shit to say.
Well, let me just jump in and set the context for everybody. This came out July 26, 2005. It is the first full length from the band, but it is their third release.
I thought they did three demos before this.
Maybe they did.
It is the podcast of misinformation. But I did.
I thought it was only two. It might have been three.
I did go back and find those albums somewhere, and I really like them.
Like the Chiodos brothers. Yeah. So before they were Chiodos, they were actually called the Chiodos brothers.
You know how they got their name?
From the back of a VHS of Crazy Killer Clowns.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It was like a director.
Yeah.
So when I lived in New York, we lived in Little Neck in New York. This was when people like, you know, you like let your kids out, you know, and they didn't have phones. It was a long time ago. And I'd go to my next door neighbors all the time. They were like the neighbors that let their kids watch anything. And I was like really little, like 5 or 6 or something. Right. And they must've put something on the TV and it fucking freaked me out. And I had recurring nightmares about it till I was 20 something.
Was it Killer Clowns?
And it was Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And finally I saw like somebody post a picture of it online and I didn't know what the movie was. I thought it was like something that I made up in my head again. You know, I thought it was like some bullshit thing that I was like, I must've just made that up in like my overactive imagination. But I had a reoccurring nightmare about Killer Clowns from Outer Space for 20 years. And then I found out that this motherfucker named his band after it.
I wonder if this is why you have like a weird clown thing.
I don't know. I like them, but I'm like, I'm not scared of them, but I've got like an association
with
like,
it. You like love it. Like whenever we're like brainstorming like creative stuff and even like the brand that you did a few years ago, Okay Ballet, like you really like that clown aesthetic. You always kind of go back to it.
It's
in a lot of ways.
It fucked me up. It fucked my like childhood
weird
up.
Trauma.
Yeah, it like really fucked my, because it was like, dude, it was like, you're not supposed to see that shit when you're a little kid. And it really like got into my brain somehow. And I remember like, very specific things about it. And you know, kind of when I was like, I'm, if anybody is, you know, I'm sure there's a bunch of people that watch this who've never met me or like, but I'm real small. So like everything seemed really big to me growing up. Like everything seemed really exaggerated. And this was one of those things. And I was like, I couldn't tell if it was actually scary or it was one of those things that, you know, when I went back to New York, and we were talking to Anthony about this, when I went back to New York to like go stand in front of that house, I was like wondering if the trees were going to be, if the backyard was as big as and long and as fucking never ending as I thought. And like, while it was big, it was a regular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of like listening to this, it like made me be like, oh, Craig is like probably grew up and felt the same way about stuff. Yeah. Like overactive and like making things extravagant. And, you know, just trying to relate this back to that album, because I feel like it does do that. It makes things seem really larger than life. And so I can see a lot of people fucking being like, this is my fucking thing. And the cool thing about this, so I went and I watched a lot of like a couple of YouTube videos on this, and a really good way to get information is like reading the comments in the YouTube stuff. Like I usually go to Reddit, but it's like pretty surface level with this type of shit. But if you go back and you watch some Chiodos stuff, it's like, you know, these were they're out of like outside of Flint, Michigan. I don't think there's a lot of stuff going on in Flint, Michigan. And you have a band like this in 2006. You're a high schooler and you go to the mall, and like this album for Michigan must have been the like, oh my God, I saw like did you see Chiodos? Oh, I saw Chiodos. I was like, he walked behind me, or I walked in front of me, like in the show. Like, this was that thing for that state. Like, oh, this was that for that.
I'm sure.
Oh, you know, I know him. Yeah. Yeah. We're really cool. He's like one of my best friends.
They had a couple member changes on this record. They brought in two, I think, incredibly important pieces. Guitarist Jason Hale and drummer Derek Frost.
Dude, Jason Hale's a motherfucker.
Insane. Nobody knows where he is.
No one knows where he is?
No.
Like, in general?
He just is kind of, like, not on the internet. Nobody knows what he went on to do. He didn't have any, like, other bands. I don't know. I couldn't find him.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's ask Craig.
Okay.
But he is a fucking, like, he, not like, really, really, really gnarly guitar player. And the thing that he did where... this album, I think, did another thing too. You know those like forbidden chords. I forgot what they're called. Where it's like
tritones.
Yeah, something like that. Like,
yeah, like where it's really dissonant.
Yeah, I love those. Like, I love that. Yeah. Like, the Blood solidified that for me. But like, this came out around probably the same time.
Scene. Yeah.
Same scene, and they did that so well. It was like it was the first time that I had ever heard anything like that in like a breakdown. You know, and it was different than, like, the hardcore that I listened to, which was just, like, chug breakdown.
Right.
It did this type of shit, and they did it really well. But then they also went into, like, you know, like a whole different motherfucker.
I think, yeah, this album set a new bar for post-hardcore. I think, like you said, it probably launched 1,000 other bands that wanted to be like them. There was that whole scene, I feel like, that came right after this of... bands like the Number 12 Looks Like You.
Yeah, Devil Wears Prada and shit. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Chiodos had a huge, huge part in why that was so popular and why so many people wanted to make that kind of music.
And it is different, right? Like, it's, you know, we've done the Pierce the Veil stuff and they're not quite hardcore, but they're heavy. And we've done some stuff, we've done pop punk stuff. And like this... it seems to be we've done like Hawthorne Heights, we've done Screaming, we've done all these bands, and this is the first album that like took that, the scene that we were in, and molded it into something different.
I think it feels more grown up than like a Hawthorne Heights.
Yep.
It's got this like level of sophistication to it and actual artistry, and you know, a lot of the lyrics are Shakespeare, you know?
You guys want to hear Shakespeare conspiracy?
Sure, theory? Yeah.
All right, so there's a group of people called the anti-Stratfordians, and they believe that Shakespeare didn't exist.
Right.
A lot, like this album, you're a lyric guy. Sometimes I am, like with, like, Saves the Day I Am. But like, I usually am like, song is a good song. And I was like, oh yeah, these are a lot of Shakespeare lyrics. And so I went to go like look up some of that shit. And I remember listening to on one of my conspiracy theory podcasts that they were like, dude, Shakespeare didn't exist. And so these anti-Stratfordians, whatever, think that Shakespeare didn't exist. And he was a collective of people. And the reason why they think that is because of Shakespeare's education and background. So they argue that Shakespeare, who was from a small town and had modest education, wouldn't have had the extensive knowledge of law, history, and foreign languages seen in his work. The lack of evidence that there are very few records about Shakespeare's life and that none directly show him writing plays. The think that this is the lack of evidence suggests he wasn't the true author. And then three more. The quality and quantity. They find that it's hard to believe that one person could write so many high-quality plays and poems in such a short time. There's different writing styles. So some scholars note the differences in writing styles within the works attributed to Shakespeare, suggesting multiple authors. And then secret identities. This is a cool one. They say they propose that other well-educated and prominent figures of time, like Francis Bacon, could have used Shakespeare's name to publish their work secretly. So that's a little bit of conspiracy theory for you. It also, then it, guess what? Then it dives deep into like you know, they somehow related to the Jews, you know.
Like, so I feel like that's all conspiracy theories go back to.
They
that.
Always go back. It always goes back. Like, you can fucking pinpoint anything, and they're like,
Well, let me just, I highlighted some of the Shakespeare fast facts that Joni pulled. So
was
the song,
any of those?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with the conspiracy theories, but these are like some of the Shakespeare references on the album. So, number one, the song "One Day Women Will All Become Monsters" is a reference to Shakespeare's play King Lear. Most of the lyrics from that song, as well as the title of the song, are taken almost word for word from the play.
Maybe Shakespeare. Maybe Francis Bacon.
Maybe.
Maybe a collective of people.
The song "There's No Penguins in Alaska" is made up from a number of Shakespeare's sonnets. The chorus comes from line 5 of Shakespeare's 5th. The term "murderous shame" is borrowed from the line 14 of his 9th. And the lyrics, "the worst was this, my love was my decay," are taken from line 14 of his 80th.
Yeah, all those sound different. Guess what? I'm an anti-Stratfordian, dude.
The line...
I'm a Shakespeare denier.
The line "star-crossed lovers" obviously comes from
Romeo and Juliet.
That's on the song "Expired in Gorville." And the last one she wrote here, in the song "All Nereids Beware," the opening line, "this spring of love resembles the uncertain glory of an April day," is a modern adaptation of a line said by Proteus in the Shakespearean play, "The Two Gentlemen of Verona."
Yeah, it's cool. And it's cool to hear that shit, like, screamed. You know, like, I think he was one of the, I didn't know anybody that took shit from history and then made it into a hardcore. Yeah, you know, like, that's a cool thing to do. I don't think that seems to be, like, pretty revolutionary.
Do you know what a Nereid is?
He was like Hamlet. Or wait, what's that fucking play? Where, everybody's rapping?
Hamilton?
Hamilton. He's like Hamilton. He's the first Hamilton.
Do you know what a Nereid is? It's like a Greek sea nymph. Like a mermaid, kind of. But they have legs. Kind of hot.
Yeah. Like, those are just like the tattoos that I have. It's like shitty fucking. Wait, why? What is that?
What's the name of the song? "All Nereids Beware."
Yeah. And if you take a look at the album cover, it kind of resembles that.
We can talk a little bit about the album art if you want.
I do. I don't know anything about it.
So the album artwork is by someone named Paul Romano, according to the back of the album cover. They also put
Ray's brother.
His, yeah, he's the one with the weird voice.
I made the Chiodos album.
I can't even do it. He does Mastodon artwork.
Oh, really?
Yeah, look at his shit.
That's cool. People fuck with Mastodon. It's a real, like, Amanda booking situation.
Yeah, she would book that. But he does, like, a lot of metal artwork. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they are metal. Like,
it's pretty fucking metal.
Like, it's kind of how I was... Like, I described the Hawthorne Heights situation. It's like your parents heard you listening to this in 2005, and they're like, God damn it, dude.
This album that I'm holding in my hand, this CD, this particular pressing, is actually the reissue that came out in 2006. And the reason that I know that is because it came with a DVD.
Do you watch it?
I don't have a DVD player, or I would have.
Should we pop it in?
Where?
CDJs. Just like shove it into the USB port.
No, that's why they're called CDJs, because they have CDs.
All right.
Holes. We could actually play the CD on CDJs.
Do they have CD holes?
I think so, yeah.
Where?
I think in the front. Maybe a lot in the 2000s. Maybe they got rid of them. But that's why they're called CDJs.
Got to learn something new every day.
They definitely had them on the 1000s.
Yeah, damn. Didn't know that. All right, more shit about this album, because I don't know too much about it.
Well, this is one of the weird... Okay, and we've done 15 or 16 of these episodes now. This is one of the only albums where there was a section on the Wikipedia called trivia.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
And I was like, that's awesome. Fast facts. That's like what I've been looking
for
with
really
all this
cool.
Shit.
No, it is cool.
Let's see. Let's see. Okay. There's long ass song titles.
I have something to say about that too.
Okay, let me just trivia.
Rattle it off.
The song "To Trixie and Reptile, Thanks for Everything," it's a reference to old girlfriends of band members Craig Owens and Bradley Bell.
That motherfucker had a girlfriend named Reptile?
Yeah, Reptile and Trixie. Maybe that was a nickname. Maybe it was a nickname. There's a song in here called Who's Sandy Jenkins? And I thought that was very funny because Sandy Jenkins is just a woman from Bradley Bell's church who was friends with his mom.
like
and
Peter.
He had no idea. He just name stuck in his head and he was like, who's Sandy Jenkins? And they named the song that. It has nothing to do with Sandy Jenkins. And imagine being this like old woman in Michigan who just like goes to church and then you have a song named Who's Sandy Jenkins?
Imagine being your high school chemistry teacher, Peter Hayes, and hearing his name every time we use Hayes in a venue.
Oh, he's dead, though.
Yeah, he's dead.
I wonder if Sandy's still kicking.
She's probably not. Rest in peace, Sandy Jenkins.
The song titled There's No Penguins in Alaska came from the inside of a Snapple cap. Do you guys remember, I don't know if the people who listen to this remember, but when you would open a Snapple bottle, you flip it over and it would show you a fact.
That's like kind of what this podcast is, except we're wrong. They're like wrong Snapple facts. Like that's exactly what this is like. It's like opening a fucking a bottle of iced tea and then being like, this is, did you know that the sky is red?
In a podcast interview with AP Magazine, Craig Owens revealed that Baby You Wouldn't Last a Minute on the Creek is lyrically about Craig wanting to quit the band. And this was like their fucking first debut full length. And then one cool thing that I noticed in here, it has something printed on the inside of the elbow. What do they call this? The binding. It says, I'll stop stabbing when you stop screaming. And I've been looking for some vintage Chiodos merch because I was so inspired by this. I was like, I got to get like a shirt like this for Chiodos. They have an amazing hoodie. It says, I'll stop stabbing when you stop screaming, and I gotta get it.
Two things to say.
Okay.
One, the C, that's the Chiodos C.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, we're gonna rip that off for emo night.
Mm.
Two, I always bring this band up, The Blood. They had on their physical CD. Mm-hmm. So if you go back and look at like one of Jimmy Eat World's first CDs, it says, it's just all black, and it says, can you still feel the butterflies on it? And The Blood did the same thing, but it says, can you still feel the butcher knives?
Ooh.
It's awesome. But I think it's like an Arizona thing, you know? Arizona guys doing Arizona stuff. Yeah. I like it. That's cool. That's a cool thing to do when that CDs exist. You can't do that on like a fucking digital release.
Another funny thing that I found about this band.
What?
They did a
Craig looks like me, but taller.
Add him to the list. They did a secret set at Bamboozle one year under the name Fluff My Boner.
At what year?
I think it was 2006.
Really?
But I found a shirt on eBay from Fluff My Boner from that one appearance.
Wait, really?
Yes.
How much is it?
$150.
Put it on the company and
imagine just wearing this.
Put it on the company and wear it when we interview Craig and see if he fucking says anything.
It's a size small, dude, or I would.
I'll do it.
I'm too fat now.
I'll do it. That's really funny that they did that.
Yeah.
That's really funny that they did that. They played Chiodo songs?
Yeah, I think so. I couldn't find too much information. It was like one Reddit post that was like, am I making this up or did Chiodos play a secret show at Bamboozle under the name Fluff My Boner? And then I was searching eBay for just Chiodos shirts and this Fluff My Boner shirt popped up. So maybe we ask Craig, what the fuck is Fluff My Boner? Can you explain it?
A little bit about Craig is that, you know, I watched a lot of live footage from this and every single one of them gave me chills. I was like, this guy is, it's really hard to explain when somebody's got it and when somebody doesn't, you know, and he did. And does.
He sounds so good still.
But not only that, but like as a front man, and there's something kind of, you know, it's called star power, but you know, especially in like a scene like this, to have that type of thing is, you know, few and far between. And I think it's a lot of the reasons why these bands didn't get as big as they did, because they didn't have like somebody being like having that star power. You can't learn it. You are born with it. And, you know, it's when they went on to have like different singers and shit. It's like this. That's why It's why Craig is the way he is. It's like why he is so, why this album is so fucking amazing.
You know that it's not the full band at When We Were Young, right?
No.
It's Craig and probably the guys who's playing for drugs. I don't know who it's going to be, but it was announced, like the other guys in the band went on Instagram and they were like, you know that we're not doing it.
Oh, why? They just don't fuck with each other?
I don't know.
They seem to have a bunch of turmoil, dude. This mm-hmm. band seemed to, and look, and the thing about it is like, you know, he's got, I don't care, this is stuff I'd say to him. You know, he's got like drugs shit. It's got ego stuff, and I have the same thing. So it's like fine. Like I get it. Like I get the thing that he's got, and especially you can tell because he had like three other fucking different projects while he was doing this. His brain is constantly going, and you know this could be somebody's life work, but he was like, oh, I'm gonna put out three more things while this was happening.
I love the fact that the way he just like still grinds so hard with drugs. And like the band.
Yeah.
You know, he is constantly touring, constantly doing, when he's not touring, he's doing our fucking Nemo nights. Like he's just out there still really fucking working and hustling and like doing great. Like the drug shows look amazing.
Yeah. And they're a good band.
Yeah.
It's a really good band. I like drugs a lot. I mean, clip that. But this album, I was like, I get it. It really is like one of those things where I was like, I didn't listen to it a ton when it came out. I knew about it and then came back and I was like instantly 100% understand, you know? And I think that anybody could, if they go back and listen to this album, like, it's like, you get it the whole way through. I want to reiterate the fact that it is awesome listening in order from front to back. It really is cool.
It's an experience.
I like didn't want it to be over.
Yeah.
Is the thing. And I don't know if it's because I was on the plane and I was like, keep going, dude. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to listen to it again.
What were your standout tracks?
Hold on. I also thought, dude, like, all right. And they did like this long song title thing.
Yeah.
You know, I hope pop artists start doing that.
They will never come back.
I think it will.
You think?
Yeah, I think it will.
I don't think it'll come back in pop.
I want it to. I think it will come back. It has to come back. I'm calling it. It's going to come back. Like okay. Sabrina Carpenter is going to put out a song that is like a fucking full sentence. I guarantee it. Okay. Dude, I like also, there was like 400 parts to every song.
I know. Yeah.
Like I can't. I don't remember what I did like 2 hours ago. I don't know how these guys like remembered. I don't know how they
remembered it at all.
All of these parts. They're my favorite songs. Yeah. The World's Best Friend. I think that riff is like a pretty legendary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it's like a pretty legendary guitar.
I mean, I think the back-to-back of Baby, You Wouldn't Last a Minute on a Creek into The World's Best Friend Become Redefined is just top tier.
That's like what you were the one that like played those for me and I was mm-hmm. like.
Mm, yeah, these fuck.
Yeah, those are fucking awesome. And then One Day Women Will All Become Monsters.
There's No Penguins in Alaska is a lot of people's favorite.
That is a lot of people's favorite. I saw that on the thing. And then the song, the one song that has like the pop punk sounding thing is To Trixie.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Like the one fucking part of the album, you're like, am I listening to the same album?
Like, yeah, I wonder what the impetus was for that. Guess we'll have to ask.
I'll ask him.
Have to ask his ass.
What were yours?
I loved, you know, Baby Into Words.
It is sick. Like, wasn't Baby the single?
I don't know.
I think it was, but I really think the world's best friend. Best friend's like the fucking single.
Yeah.
I think so. But I mean, like, then again, Baby When Last has that like fucking incredible part in the middle. I don't know. It's all good, dude.
Jumping into the liner notes, this surprised me a little bit.
What?
This album was produced by Mark Hudson. Do you have any guesses what his credits also include?
Mark Hudson.
We've never talked about him before. I was surprised to learn he works with Saves the Day.
Really?
And Two Tongues. And Taking Back Sunday, Sunny Day Real Estate, and Against Me.
Oh, so he has some pretty fucking wild credits, dude.
Let's see what Saves the Day songs, yeah. Albums he did.
And also look up which Sunny Day he did. Dude, there's one two song. There's a two tongue song that's so fucking good.
Daybreak, producer, engineer, mixing, and mastering.
Really? He did all of it.
Saves the day, saves the day. Producer slash engineer.
Damn, he did. So he's doing like the newer ones. Which Sunny Day did he do?
Sunny Day Real Estate live at London Bridge Studio Mixer.
So there's something about this, those like the albums or the demos, like demos before.
Under the Boards.
He did Under the Boards?
Co-producer, engineer, mixer.
Damn.
With Eric Stenman.
That shit sounds fucking heavy.
And?
I don't want to talk about Saves the Day on this, but that
we just did the Saves the Day episode. If you're listening to this, we record two podcasts in a day.
We record two in a day.
So we just did the Saves the Day episode. But I thought that was really interesting when I was doing research for this, and especially because they were paired up. Like, I never really would have thought that the guy who produced Saves the Day also produced Giotto's.
Well, the thing about that Under the Boards album is, like, it is slapping. Like, that's, like, it's a bassier, like, very heavy. That makes sense. Because if now listening to that album, I'm like, oh, it sounds much different than every Saves the Day album. That makes absolute sense.
I'm going to have to listen on the way home.
It's awesome. It's awesome. The way it starts, you'll be like, oh, I get it. They fucking nailed. It's my favorite bass tone, by the way, in the entire world.
Really?
In the entire world. I think there's never been a better bass sound recorded than that album.
Under the Boards.
Under the Boards, Saves the Day.
All right.
Bro, I'm bring it back to Saves the Day. I guarantee I feel like you'll think so too.
We already talked about the album art and I'll Stop Stabbing When You Stop Screaming. There's nothing really too interesting about this album packaging or liner notes other than that. I mean, the artwork is pretty fucking cool. If you open it up, it's got a lot of pages. I think it's like one song per page, which is great.
Dude, I feel like they must fucking hate each other. This band, like, must just... what the fuck was going on.
There's definitely a lot of turmoil. You know, they parted ways with Craig Owens for the third album. They brought on a different singer. Then Craig came back for a bit, and they brought in Thomas from The Fall of Troy to play guitar. But that's pretty much it for liner notes. I really would love to watch this DVD. It says there's live videos of them performing at the Metro in Chicago. There's a Bamboozle live, and then a video of them playing to Trixie and Reptile acoustic at Chain Reaction.
I mean, the thing I like about watching all those live videos is it was so electric. Like, I really got it. I got it. Like, there's videos of, like, Craig just, like, up in the crowd, like, standing on people. Like, yeah, I think it was pretty revolutionary for, like, what this scene saw.
He's a rock star.
Yeah.
He's 150% a rock star. He's an icon in the scene.
I mean, I know, look, when we had him in, like, New York for the first time, I didn't realize it because, you know, like, I wasn't, like a humongous Chiodos fan. And all of the girls that I'm friends with in New York were like, oh, my God, are you serious? Craig's going to be there. Are you serious? Craig's going to be there. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? So yeah, like he's got the thing, you know.
Yeah, he's got
that fucking thing. Might just be because he's tall.
I mean, he's a pretty handsome guy.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy. Looks like me.
All right. Anything else you want to add about this record?
I don't know. Let me see. Oh, the only thing that I could really think about when we were listening to this, I was like, I would never be able to, like, beat match any of this. You can't grab any of it.
Mm-mm.
Like, you can't grab any of it.
I wonder if they did it to click.
I don't know how you could do... I don't know if you do, like, certain songs to click or certain parts to click or, like...
Maybe they did record it in sections. We should ask that.
Because it's, like, pretty difficult to follow along, and it changes really quickly. The only other thing that I really do want to add was that the guitar player, Jason Hale... is one of the best guitar players from this genre that I've heard. Like, it stood out to me. I was like, this guy is fucking awesome. Dude, I bet this is what he's doing. He feels like a guitar nerd. And he's like, just wants to play guitar. He's like one of those guys where he, like, only cares about guitar.
Just playing guitar alone.
Yeah, he's just, like, cares about being, like, autistic about guitar, you know?
We're just speculating here, by the way. We don't know anything about Jason Hale's life.
I would be willing to bet.
Okay.
I would be willing to put my... And then he was like, I don't want to be on tour. I just literally want to play riffs in my room. Like, I guarantee that he just has, like, a normal life. He works at, like, fucking Home Depot and goes home and shreds. And his kids are shredders.
You could,
like,
be right.
I would be willing to bet.
You could be right.
I would be willing, because it's that good.
It's that good. It is that good. And I think that was why people were so excited when Thomas Eric joined the band from Fall of Troy, because he's also a fucking shredder.
Yeah. And it's that I listened to that album after. It is also really good. And then I went back and, like, you know, people, you know, this was pretty much everybody's, like, they're like, this is my favorite one. But they said after Time, the album after this, they became to, like, really love and view it as a classic as well. But they're like, it's just really hard to deny that this is the album.
Yeah, there's something special about this record.
There really is something special about this record. From listening it for the first time from front to back without knowing a lot about it, I got it. That's like, if anything, that's kind of what I want to give this podcast, is like, I got this. Like, I got it.
So if you like this, you might like that.
So there's this band that, again, I got through YouTube comments. And I feel like I've heard them before. And I went and listened to them. And it's a band called Catherine. Mm. Yeah, it's really... When we do these, I try and be like, what maybe have people not listened to or not heard of? And I went back and they're a really good, really, really good band.
I am going to make one of our interns listen to every single episode of this podcast and put together a playlist of all of our, if you like this, you might like that.
That would be awesome. I would listen to that. I would listen to that playlist.
Okay. Sorry, Joni. That's your new assignment.
Kind of a fun assignment. But then she has to listen to, like, the where we say it.
Yeah, it's usually at the end. Okay, I put Fear Before.
Mm-hmm.
It kept popping into my head, Horse the Band. You remember them?
Yeah, I do remember Horse the Band. Yeah. I like Horse the Band.
Yeah, they're cool. They're fun. And, like, the synth parts of this, like, when it just randomly goes into synth. I mean, Horse the Band is, like, more goofy, obviously, but I kept getting, like, they're just, like, fun and, like, sporadic and, like, kind of all over the place.
That was, like
this.
My ex-girlfriend Carrie's favorite band.
Really?
Yeah.
The other band, not well known, but one of my favorites. I fucking loved this band. Grace Gale. It is Sean Forman from 303's brother.
Yeah, you've talked about this a lot. You've talked about this
so
a lot.
So fun and cool. And, like, I actually didn't even know that it was Sean's brother. I was like, do you know this band from Colorado, Grace Gale? And he's like, dude, that's my brother. And I was like, no fucking way. I loved that band so much. They have one album and it's pretty similar to this, but it's more goofy, obviously, and funny. And I just mean it has, like, a million different parts and, like, kind of crazy guitars. And, like,
are they available, like, on Spotify? Can people listen to it?
Yeah.
There is one other. Did this ever?
Grayscale has 800 monthly listeners.
Cool. See, that's how many does Catherine have? Look that up. That's, like, when we do this, I want the bands to have, like, 800 monthly listeners.
8,898.
Yeah, still not a lot.
Not a lot.
But still, like, but I really liked it.
Is it from the 90s?
I don't know. I have no idea.
This band, Catherine, that I'm looking at has releases 94 and 96.
We'll play one of them.
This is their most popular song. It's called Whisper. Might not be the right band.
No, it's not it. That couldn't be it. Here, let me look it up. Did this album chart at all? Anywhere?
This album did chart. It ended up on this 164 on the Billboard 200, number 11 on the independent albums, and number 3 top heat seekers.
And it was, like, so, like, they fucking toured with, like, Linkin Park after this album.
Did they really?
They did. Like, that's how fucked everybody was about this album. They were like, it is that good that Linkin Park was like, yeah, you guys are coming with us.
Good.
This is Catherine. It's like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You get it? And this is what Catherine looks like.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just saw those
guys. That's that. And I never heard of them before. I usually, like, feel like I'm pretty decent at these, like, weird, obscure ones. Hardcore. Obscure. At least knowing their name of them.
And I also wrote down the Blood Brothers.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, you could really, really see the Blood Brothers doing some of this stuff. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. But it sounds
the
like...
Blood Brothers. The other day I was driving through my neighborhood and I saw a van that said the Flood Brothers. And it's just like LA Plumbing Service. And I was like, that's good. I got to take a picture of that and send it to Morgan.
I love the Blood Brothers.
But when I went back, the Flood Brothers were gone.
Yeah, we looked it up though. And then every single person in their company is bald. Like, you have to be bald to be in that company.
The Bald Brothers.
Yeah, it's good. Flood Brothers is very funny.
Thank you guys for listening to CD Burners.
Bye.
Bye.